From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deck. And most importantly, you are you, you are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know here live, for us at least, in a beautiful, beautiful rainy afternoon here in our fair metropolis of Atlanta, Georgia. It's dreary, it's gray, it's rainy. Flip on the Shirley Manson. If you're only happy when it rains, this is like the setting for a murder mystery.
Although from where we sit right now, we wouldn't know, because we're encased in a box made of sort of plywood and foam that's inside of a concrete room that's covered in wood paneling and also acoustic foam. And then we're in a sort of a dark cave outside of
that. Yeah, I was going to say, I've been in the cave all day. I had no idea it was raining today, guys.
It's also in this entire apparatus is inside a giant concrete building itself.
Also true.
Yeah, it takes us, it takes us about 3 minutes to figure out what the weather is, just to get out and go to where the outside windows are.
Do you think it means we're being shielded against radiation, though?
To a degree, yeah.
Well, that's a net positive, I would say.
Other than the radiation, all our electronics are emitting.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a very good question, especially for today's episode. Now, you know, the weather is a very personal thing for a lot of people, but it's a safe thing you can talk about with almost anyone. And in these interesting times, weather has become even more of a extraordinary topic, because the times and the climes are changing, right?
You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
It's true. And you know what? Past about 2 weeks, those meteorologists are almost like alchemists, you know?
Sure.
Because so much stuff can happen. It's not their fault. I wanted to be a weatherman for a long time.
But those models are becoming so sophisticated. It's pretty cool.
Which models?
The ones that they're using AI to predict
Now? Okay.
I mean, it's Watson is all up in the weather channel.
Yeah, but can they gesture convincingly at a green screen map, Matt, I ask you?
I'm just saying the models themselves are better. So,
yeah.
Like, the two-week thing is, like, still there. But you could just watch it develop now at a better resolution?
Mm-hmm. Maybe not for – that two-week limit might not be – might be a thing of the past sooner rather than later. But, you know, for a lot of people here in Atlanta, for peek behind the curtain, the rain has just played out now. People are tired of the rain. They've done all their rainy day stuff. They want some sunshine, right? I am, of course – my ancient nemesis is the sun, so I love it whenever that guy is not directly at me. You know what I mean?
I understand.
And that's like, I think a lot of people can agree, but a lot of people love sunshine. So to get our minds off the weather, it is going to rain all week here, we're going to explore a seemingly benign concept, sunshine, sunlight, sunny days. We've been inspired by a lovely email from a fellow conspiracy realist, Reba.
It says, "Hey, chaps, forgive me if you've already covered it, as I've only started listening to your podcast and reviewing your past subjects very recently, but have you investigated the relationship between solar activity and its effect on mass excitability and human health? It's a dang interesting subject. I'm currently reading Solar History, The Connection of Solar Activity, War, Peace, and the Human Mind in the Second Millennium by Sasha Dobler, which is a bit poorly written, awkwardly academic, and roughly edited, but full of interesting information and statistical significance."
Ouch.
Well, yeah. "If you haven't, will you consider doing the research and making an episode? In any case, keep up the great work. Hugs and high fives, Reba."
It does sound like the book contained enough of a spark of inspiration that at least got Reba started. So
yes.
You got to give it credit for that, even if its construction left something to be desired.
And we love book recommendations here on the show. So thank you very much, Reba, for both listening, checking out our show and all that, and sending us a cool recommendation.
And here are the facts. First, what is solar activity? The sun is this enormous, beautiful, dangerous, deadly thing. And regardless of what we do with our time on Earth, we the living all know that if things continue on their present course, the sun will eventually consume this little rock we call home.
Yeah, as As this article on neuroresearchproject.com says, the sun giveth, the sun taketh away.
It's too true. Assuming we might somehow avoid all the other terrible things that very well could happen between now and the end of the rock, you know, that stuff like gamma ray bursts, that stuff like a rogue object in space just smacking the tar out of us, no matter what happens, in about 7.5 billion years or so, we're ballparking here, the sun will transform into a red giant. It will expand, and it's just its size alone will be will engulf the orbit of Earth.
Won't it make Earth unlivable long before it actually engulfs it, though?
Yes.
Yeah.
No worries. Humans will be long gone by then. We'll either be extinct, or whatever evolves from us will be out there deep in the ink exploring the stars. This is like watching a long but really good movie and already knowing who the killer is at the end. And, you know, could we even call this a killer? Because with this point about human beings being long gone when the sun finally eats our planet, it's how Lovecraftian, it feels like maybe the sun is relegated to one of those villains who shows up in a post-credit stinger.
I could see that, but it's also the main character because the sun – the star around which we orbit is the reason why life exists on this planet, or it's one of the primary reasons it exists. So it is like that. It's like that movie Mother.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But we're the babies.
Whoa. You're talking about the infamous baby scene?
Well, I don't know. No, it's not like that.
Or it's like it's similar to that. What was that Robert De Niro film from years back where he's an investigator?
Angel Heart,
yeah, and he finds out like I'm the person I was chasing all along.
Well, wait, no, he's the devil in Angel Heart.
Oh no, wait, who's the
Mickey
main guy?
Rourke?
Mickey Rourke, right. There it is.
And Lisa Bonet has a quite steamy love-making scene where she is drenched in chicken blood.
I gotta say, I didn't like Robert De Niro's devil. I didn't like.
He's got a really. Isn't his name like Louis Cipher?
Yeah.
I think it's Louis Cipher.
And his whole infernal nature is shown in his weird fingernails.
His weird, creepy fingernails. Like he's got, yeah. It's an interesting movie, though. Alan Parker, who directed Pink Floyd, The Wall. Worth your time, but yes, does not particularly age well.
I love this kind of stuff, too. Give me a good modern Faustian devil tale. Shout out to Devil's Advocate, that one.
There we go.
So you're saying so the sun is almost simultaneously God and the devil in one,
yeah,
in a weird way, right?
And a lot of early religions agree with us.
Because it's like our biggest proponent. Sorry, it's giving us our biggest attaboy and saying, hey, you guys down there on Earth, good job. I'm making this happen for you. But, you know, I also might be your ultimate demise.
The sun is our abusive parent is one other way to sum it up. So, you know, for better or worse, we're along for just a little bit. We're along for the ride. And there's something beautiful about that. Very David Attenborough, very Planet Earth documentary. For the vast majority of life on Earth, the sun is an ubiquitous, crucial presence.
At least for all the life that's listening to this right now.
Well, we can assume, I think. Plausibly, we can assume.
You're right until, okay.
We might be big with the deep sea vent crowd. I don't know.
Okay, I was just thinking more along the lines of, well, no, even then, if it was a machine, there's likely a solar power component once the machines are listening to this.
Sure, unless we're far enough along in the future that our demographic has somehow become nuclear-powered. Synthetic machine consciousness. In which case, thanks for tuning in. Yeah. Tell us what happens in the future. Right now we have the sun. It's the big engine powering life on Earth. It's a gigantic ball made up of thermonuclear explosions. It's only 93 million miles away from us, and it is responsible for the continuation of life as we know it, full stop.
And, you know, we think of it as a very cohesive thing. Oh, look, there's the sun. Like, it's got this inherent stability to it. But that's not quite the case at all. If you got a really close look at it, it would look like, you know, the depths of hell, basically, with roiling explosions and inferno just constantly shifting like a sea of fire.
And if you want to take a close look at it, I would recommend, as I generally do when we do an episode that involves the sun in any way is head over to spaceweather.com. It's one of my favorite websites. You can go there and actually see the latest videos from all of the varying solar satellites that exist out there, where you can actually watch the sun and roil around like hellfire.
Or just like look at it directly, like right into it with your eyes. No, don't do that. I'm kidding.
You hit me to that site years and years ago, Matt, and I remain grateful. I was actually, when I was digging into some of this, I had that just playing because, you know, you can just pull it up. And
yeah.
There's something peaceful about all that chaos so far away.
Oh, yeah. You will begin to get obsessed with coronal holes and mass ejections and all kinds of fun things if you start going on that website.
The sun is what we call a magnetic variable star. It fluctuates on weird timescales ranging from as short as a fraction of a second to billions and billions of years. It's full, in short, of, wait for it, activity. So what is solar activity? That's your question. To answer your question, Reba, we have to figure out that part first.
Yeah, it's like a umbrella term, really, isn't it? That kind of refers to everything from flares, solar flares we talked about, to those coronal mass ejections you were talking about, Matt, to high-speed solar winds and solar energetic particles. Solar activity really is the sum of all variable and short-lived disturbances on the sun. So sunspots, for example, and prominences count as solar activity as well.
Prominences are weird.
Well, yeah, kick that to us.
So like a sunspot, if you're looking at it, looks like a spot on the sun where there's kind of a hole, essentially. It looks like there's a hole in the sun's surface there. And then and it's really interesting because when there's a hole, a sunspot, a lot of times you're going to have higher frequencies of solar wind and basically particles coming out from closer to the middle and center of the sun. But then you got these things called prominences, and it looks like a flame whip, maybe?
Yeah.
A giant flame whip.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to describe it.
Like the Balrog.
The Balrog. Yeah.
Yes. Very scientific. Yeah, and sometimes those whips, when like you'll see it occur where a prominence will kind of happen, and then some of that stuff that the solar activity stuff, it actually shoots out.
Sun stuff.
Sun stuff just shoots out.
And then it snatches Gandalf off the ledge and flings him down into the pit of ultimate despair.
Sometimes.
The whole time making a very deep Cthulhu Azathoth-esque. That's what the sun sounds like.
Yeah, almost always. It's so weird. You don't expect it. But that stuff is really dangerous. We'll talk about it more later. Maybe.
Well, we've talked about danger. Let's ask ourselves, how does the sun affect you? You might be someone saying, look, guys, I've been your NSA intern for years now. They're not letting me out of the bunker. I see the sun on television. What does it mean to me? The answer might seem obvious, but it bears thinking about. Let's look at the pros of sunlight as well as the cons. Huh? It's not just skin cancer. I'm going to spoil it just a bit here as a somewhat anti-sun person.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's start with your positivity. The sun can, in fact, affect you in a way that would make you feel more positive.
Mm-hmm. That's why so many songs about sunshine or about how it puts you in a good mood. There's science behind that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that science actually proves that sunlight can put people in a better state of mind. When you encounter sunlight, your brain releases serotonin, which is that feel-good chemical. It's part of why hanging around outdoors can boost your mood, even your creativity, and lower your stress. Without sunlight, when we really need sunlight to a degree, some people can experience a type of depression called seasonal affective disorder. I'm not laughing at the disorder. I just love that the acronym is SAD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That people get sad when there's no sunshine.
And we have talked about that before, about how that giant ball of nuclear fire can affect us and make us a little bit depressed as it farts continuously over 7 more plus billion years.
No wonder people worship it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But here's the other thing. You get this stuff that we have, humans, have called vitamin D. It's something that your body actually generates because the sunlight is basically activating.
Yeah, vitamin D It's huge. It's real popular with the human body nowadays, and it does not occur in a ton of other places, like a ton of food sources. That's why you get it from either sunlight or vitamin D supplements or in certain fortified foods. Vitamin D, milk, right?
Yeah.
This vitamin D connection is so crucial, though, because, yeah, you know, vitamin D helps strong bones. Your PE teacher was telling you the truth, at least in that respect.
That's why you got to drink your Sunny D.
Mm-hmm. Yep, skip the purple stuff. But vitamin D also decreases chances of developing things like multiple sclerosis or pancreatic cancer. And there are plenty of other positives.
You know, photosynthesis.
There we go.
That's a big deal.
It's crazy. I mean, you can, you know, recreate it. But
we get to breathe.
It's so hot right now. Breathing is so hot right now. It's so in.
Well, I just mean even like, you know, plants, the way plants are able to
I'm
get so much
too.
Nourishment. No, but we're also talking about how trees through this process generate oxygen to help us continue. It's all this weird, like seemingly made just for us kind of system. It's almost too coincidental. It's very strange. It's the kind of stuff that really does make you ask the big questions about God and the universe and stuff, you know?
Well, yeah. Why? Because it's all connected or something? No, in one
just
giant seems, system?
I see you're being sarcastic, man.
I would also point out that we have the benefit of not being around for billions of years of trial and error.
Yeah.
Sure.
We didn't see all the stuff that totally, like, didn't work or worked for a while. But yeah, clearly, the world is a better place with the sun. Even I can admit that, but I do want to point out that there are cons of sunlight. Yes, skin cancer, right? According to Daryl Riegel, who's a doctor of dermatology at New York University, one American dies every hour from skin cancer. The overwhelming majority of these cancers are caused by overexposure to UV light. There's no question about it. Yet he warns against going full vampire, and he says this doesn't mean you should stay inside all day or that there aren't plenty of health benefits to being outdoors. Just have to balance everything. Use common sense to protect yourself. If you're given to super freckles like me and Matt, you probably as well, right?
I admit it.
Yeah. If you're given, I'm so glad freckles are okay now.
Just super freckles?
Yeah, man.
Is that just like big old frecks?
Yeah. It's a preponderance of freckles.
I see. A cluster.
Like yeah. There is no such thing on my body that is not freckles.
Oh, yeah. You've got freckles too. We're all there. I see there. Yeah, you're there too.
How did all three of us freckled fellows end up on one talky-talk?
We also have this, like, practically the same birthday.
That's true.
And Paul out there, too? Show me your arms, Paul. No, show me those freckles.
I don't believe it.
Oh, it is on his face.
No, he draws those on.
Yeah, oh, he is. He's drawing more right now.
He draws those
it's
on.
It's a Snapchat filter.
You do have to protect yourself, some people more than others, but everybody needs protection. You don't want to live your entire life in scorching sunlight. Also, a lot of people don't know this, there is a summer version of SAD. It has different effects, but when your circadian rhythms are messed up by a few hours more or less of sun each day, you can swing into a summer version of SAD. And this one, you know, seasonal affective disorder for the winter makes people a little more lethargic, a little slower, tend to listen to more emo music. But summer SAD means you're kind of jittery, you're squirrely, you're irritated, you're on edge. Hot town, summer in the city, you know.
Oh, that's a classic. Is that Mungo Jerry? No, that's different.
No.
I'm thinking in the summertime, dee-dee-dee-dee. That's another popular summer song. Are you guys aware of these seasonal affective disorder lamps that are meant to replace sunlight, especially in cities where winter is just very bleak and the sun is blotted out practically for months at a time, where it's so oppressively cold you can't go outside? It really does get to some people, and there are these lamps that supposedly help kind of kick your circadian rhythm in the butt and kind of, you know, make sure that you don't get the SADs. I've heard mixed things as far as how they, you know, are, how effective they are, but they are a thing, and some people swear by them.
They work in they're used in Scandinavian schools.
Yes, I remember talking about that last time. That's really good stuff. Check it out. A lot of the stuff I found was trying to sell these types of lights, but there is some cool research that you can stumble upon as well.
Yeah. Look, additionally, while I'm just while I've just taken shits on the sun. Additionally, if you live in a sunny, polluted area dense with cars and factories, that lovely sunshine is making the air you breathe even filthier, even more dangerous, because UV rays trigger the release of smog-forming chemicals that are linked to asthma and earlier mortality, also linked to stroke and heart disease. Also, last thing, of course, we alluded to it earlier, the sun can obviously harm your eyes.
But, you know, what if there's more to the story? Some of the stuff that we're talking about on the surface, not particularly surprising, but what if there is more to the way the sun influences our bodies and our brains? And just how much can it affect us, and does it affect us? Could solar activity actually be responsible for mass behavioral changes?
Well, yeah, and the underlying thing is kind of what Reba got to in the email there. Can the sun be some secret cause for strife and war and bad things happening on large scales for humanity? Well, we're going to explore it right after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. Why does history repeat itself? This is a question the scientist Alexander Chijevsky asked himself in the early 20th century. He hypothesized that armed conflicts, human armed conflicts, cycle in connection to solar events. In other words, Chijevsky asked, does human war ebb and flow according to the whims of the sun? Chijevsky completed his PhD at Moscow University in 1918, and this was the year that Lenin – this was the year after, rather, that Lenin seized power during the Russian Revolution. So he wrote his thesis on the topic of something called periodicity in the worldwide process. This examined the recurrence of certain events throughout history, right? That's his original question, why does history seem to repeat itself? And he looked for causes for these recurrences. Here's the gist of his argument. It gets we'll get in the weeds a little, but it's worth it. It goes back to chemistry.
I keep seeing this name and I want to pronounce it Tchaikovsky. It's very close. It's Chijevsky. Yeah, and he argued that if we can reduce the entirety of human psychology to a bunch of physicochemical processes in our brains, that's just a fancy term that means things relating to physics and chemistry or physical chemistry, then we can assume that like other physicochemistry processes in the natural world, the ones in our brains can be directly influenced by their surroundings. And this gets really close to the Gaia argument, so that Earth and all that's on it can be considered one single superorganism, all existing like as some sort of symbiotic flux with the surface of the Earth and the Earth itself.
Yeah, like the way your circulatory system is not discrete from your nervous system. They all kind of team up in a weird Avengers thing to make you you.
Wow, all of us, the life living on this rock, we're just the weird little organs that are separated and come together and create houses.
And at least in the case of our brand of primate, it's a pretty good argument that we're either vestigial or just deleterious. But you know, still we're all sharing this oversized bungalow called Earth together, and maybe you know. Maybe it's true. Maybe we all are one. But I think that's an excellent explanation. He addresses the nature of consciousness, right? And he says, what if your mind is just a series of chemical things happening, right? And if that is true, then that means that these processes must be similar to the things that happen in the world around us. And those things, of course, are influenced by other adjacent or nearby processes. So if this is all true, then this means, in his mind, that war does not develop necessarily due to human foibles, that the fault may not lie just in ourselves. The fault may lie in the stars, to bastardize Shakespeare. This means that war develops in accordance with these pre-existing natural cycles that were here before we were. And so For Chijevsky, it's just a matter of figuring out which natural laws actually affect us. So where to start? Because there are thousands of natural laws, right? We know thousands of different things occur on all sorts of scales. So he went big.
Yeah, he looked up and went, ah, that's bright. Maybe it's that thing. And here's the deal. For centuries, humans have known that the sun itself, just in observing it for all the time that we have been, we know that the sun has cycles that it goes through. And it's just cycling through how much activity is occurring on the sun and how little activity is occurring on the sun. And with these cycles, when there's a large amount of activity that's occurring, as we talked about before, a lot of sunspotting, a lot of prominences, a lot of things going on, that it's the sun, you have to think about it this way, the sun is emitting things outwards, right? Mm-hmm. That's generally what's occurring. Not a lot of stuff headed into the sun, unless you got a comet that happens to be off course or, you know, smaller pieces of rock or some kind of asteroid that just happens to end up locked into its gravity and just gets way too close. Mostly the sun is shooting stuff out. So when it does that, it's actually affecting the Earth itself. When you're thinking about geomagnetic storms, things like that, radiation that's actually hitting the planet. And there are a lot of other things too.
Yeah. So he says, look, this stuff is happening all the time. It has some sort of semi-predictable cycle. And because it's happening on such a large scale, this would be one of our top suspects for a natural process, physicochemical process that could affect a bunch of people at once, have a global influence. And this is the rough sketch of what Chijevsky called heliobiology. So the question is, I mean, like, neat idea, right? That's a cool thesis. If I were on his board or whomever approved him, I would think this guy's, you know, I don't know if it's true, but this guy's cool, right? I would want to take your class.
Well, yeah, it's certainly an out-of-the-box way of thinking, or maybe just an ancient way of thinking, right?
Perhaps, yeah. So let's look at how it measures up. Chijevsky ultimately says the regular occurrence of historical events, of history repeating itself, can be linked to the sun's cycle, which is about 11 years, 11-year-ish. And that's the periodic change in solar activity measured by things like you mentioned, Matt, like the number of sunspots, the changing levels of solar radiation, and so on. So this guy went back through history. He started at the 5th century BCE and went all the way up to 1914. And from that, during that time period, he divides human history into 11-year cycles, kind of following the sun. And then he further divides each of those 11-year cycles into 4 periods, and he attempts to create a predictive model of what happens.
So this is what he came up with, this notion of minimum excitability, which according to Chijevsky, lasts for 3 years and is characterized by indifference of the masses to political matters. And the masses, you know, humanity, and autocratic rule by a minority. This is fascinating stuff. This concept of the growth of excitability, the second period that lasts for 2 years and is marked by the emergence of new ideas and the agitation of the masses.
Oh, yeah. Well, guess what? Now you got maximum excitability.
This is the climactic moment.
This is the one you've been waiting for. And in this period, it's about, again, according to Chijevsky, about 3 years long. And in this, you see the real bad stuff go down. Revolts, revolutions, insurrections, the stuff that societies are torn down from and built up from.
Cry havoc.
Yes. And this is, you know, at least according to the research here, this third period corresponds to this peak of the solar cycle, the sun cycle. And when you see this, as we said before, you're going to see more sunspots, you're going to see more coronal mass ejections, more solar flares. And this is that solar cycle. We just have to jump in here really quickly and say the solar cycles are an accepted thing.
They are real, yes.
The solar cycle itself is a real thing.
We're on solar cycle 24. We're going into 25, and we count them starting from 1755.
Again, spaceweather.com.
It reminds me Matt, you need to get sponsored by this website.
I think I'm just going to start working there soon.
I think you should. But we don't want to lose you, so can you just moonlight there on the side just for your own personal edification?
Moonlight. Oh, yeah, I like it.
Oh, gosh darn it. I stepped right into that one. No, you know this reminds me of, and this is maybe, I don't want to sound like I'm being down on it, but it sounds like he's doing the thing that, like, you know, medieval doctors did, where they lined up like the humors and the levels of various like bile in people's body with like different types of maladies, you know. Sure. This seems that kind of imprecise, sort of like conjecture, where you're almost like sort of a loose connection of a real concept with this idea of a thing that's connected to it, with a little bit lacking in real hard science to back it up. You know, I don't know.
It may feel that way, but we've only just begun, my good man.
That's fair.
I have some, yeah, I personally have some reservations there. But like, to finish this cycle, because we only made it to the three, the fourth one is the final period, 3 years of decreasing excitability. This is, again, to Chayefsky, is characterized by an increasing apathy amongst the masses and a tendency toward peace. Now, it is it's important to note, though, that he did not claim humans were mentally enslaved to the sun. I fell in love with this phrase, like humans being – this concept of humans being enslaved by the sun. So I used it way too often working on this. Instead, he says, the sun influences people – here's the vagary you'll love, to do something. And it just happened that the bloodthirsty warlords of the past and the bloody solutions they proposed to whatever problem they had were just, you know, time and time again, the path of least resistance. They were the easiest thing to do. What, are you going to ask people to vote? Nobody's got time for that. Let's kill some people.
Sure.
Remind me to bring up projection theory later. Before we finish, okay?
Yes.
Just somebody say projection theory before this episode ends or I'll forget.
I make no promises, but I will do my very best.
Okay.
I do promise and I get there. I'll make sure that this does not go unsaid.
Projections. Like that?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hey, Matt, what about those projections? And I'll go, oh, yes.
Do you have theories?
Yes.
You know, we'll alley-oop you into it. So, okay, so that's the idea. You can see that it is, as you said, Matt, innovative. We can also see that just from how we've explained it now, it leaves a lot to be desired if we're looking at it through the lens of science. So we have to ask ourselves, is it true? We're going to kind of answer this question after a word from our sponsors. And we have returned. All right, spoiler alert. During his lifetime, Chayefsky was unable to scientifically prove any link between large-scale human activity and the cycles of the sun.
However, he was able to, at least when he was charting it out, map some really compelling connections there.
Yeah.
Of the time. It felt compelling to me. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just taking two variables or two things and just putting it side to side, similar to what Noel was saying there. But if you're in it or you're close enough to it,
yeah,
the whole thing just feels like, oh, this connects here. Oh, this makes sense. What?
It makes me think of the way people like put so much emphasis on the zodiac. When you look at it, there are a lot of really interesting connections with personality types and things that are associated with certain signs. But is it just kind of... No, you know what I'm saying, Ben.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I have had people present to me, oh, this sign is like this. I'm like, you're right. My friend Steve is exactly that way, you know, like, or whatever, a Virgo or what have you.
Yeah.
It's when you're painting with broad enough strokes, there's going to be some synchronicities, as I think is what's going on kind of here, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to get some flack for this, but I at one time had a gig writing horoscopes entirely. I wanted to write features for this outfit, but they asked me if I believed in horoscopes. I said, not really. And so they hired me to write the horoscope section.
That's smart.
Well, I guess. But, you know, I would rate astrology in the realm of personal beliefs. Believe the world is tough. It's cold. You got to bring your own heat. You got to bring your own light in a lot of figurative ways. So whatever it takes to get you from one day to the next.
According to my horoscope app that I recently downloaded.
Is it the one? Is it just a sun sign? Because then it's all three of us. Or did you put in like your time and your geography?
It's just co-star, and it's got when I was born, mm-hmm. which is Weird time, you guys. I didn't realize I was born at a very weird time in my life.
But that's
that was great.
At the very beginning.
That's great.
So much promise.
Matt, you were, it is true that you were born an infant.
It's true. It says, I feel big-hearted right now. I need to give myself permission to spend time with my best friend or partner. I need to show up for myself and for others. That's it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm going to say.
Really hits home.
Yeah, it's right up there with you're a fascinating, unique person because sometimes you want to do things and you do them, and sometimes you want to do things and you don't.
Whoa.
You like things that are likable and dislike things that are dislikable. You know what? Mm-hmm. In defense of astrology, I don't want to get us too derailed here. In defense of astrology and my close friends who are strict adherents to that system of belief or interpretation, the common defense is going to be something like, well, the astrology articles you read in your local paper or on a website are just going to be the 12 basic sun signs, right? And they're going to come out once a month or once a week, and they'll advise you from there. And that to get a better understanding of this, one needs to do what you've done, Matt, which is look at like the specific coordinates of where you were born on the planet, the position of the other heavenly bodies, and then the exact time of your birth. So
it got real specific, didn't it? My read that I just got after I drilled down that deep into exactly where I was born.
I feel like it's a little unfair because you're a big-hearted dude in general. You're a kind person.
You want me to read the other one where it says I'm having problems with love and sexuality?
Wow. So they gave me both. You know, for people who are fans of astrology, I would recommend, if you're interested in other astrological systems, checking out the Mayan horoscope. Remember, I used to have a program to do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because sometimes it would just tell some people that they were cursed because they were born on a bad day. Because in that particular, maybe it was Aztec, but in that particular Mesoamerican belief system, there were no such things as accidents. So if you accidentally, you know, tripped and hurt somebody, then you would be treated as though you had purposely planned and attacked them.
Whoa.
But anyway, and we still don't understand gravity. We don't understand how gravity affects the human brain. So there may be some infinitesimal gravitational pull in the developing brain based on the positions of heavenly bodies that could alter the personality in some way. That's my best scientific defense of astrology.
Hey, well, astrology in that way aside, let's talk about this guy's research because while he didn't, you know, he wasn't able to really connect these two things, human behavior and solar cycles in a concrete way. There's like people haven't stopped attempting to make some kind of connection there.
Right. Decades after his death. Thanks for getting us back on track. Sorry about that. Decades after his death, continuing research shows that there may be some sand to at least the bones of his ideas, the structure of it. There may be some siding and roofing to the bungalow. So neuroscientists over at MIT have shown they can influence people's moral decisions through the use of magnets. Magnets can, as we know from any like TMS or TCDS fans, we know that magnets can disrupt parts of your brain, change the way it functions. There's very compelling evidence that you can create the feeling of being in the quote-unquote zone through the use of these kinds of stimulations, electromagnetic stimulation. It's probably still under the realm of don't try this at home. I got really close to, you know, I built one. Which was dumb to do, but I stopped using it because there's fairly compelling evidence that has damaging long-term cognitive effects.
Dang.
So you can be cool for a short term, pretty smart and stuff, but then 20 years later, who knows? Anyway, so we know that's true. We know that what that proves to us is that electromagnetic processes can affect the human mind. So at least one assumption of this guy seems valid.
Well, and as we have discussed previously on this show, when you're thinking about the magnetosphere, the way the Earth functions as a giant dipole magnet, I mean, it's it's bigger than that. It's more complex than that. But if you look at it, the actual magnetics of what the Earth is generating and then how that gets affected by solar wind and the sun itself and everything, where the magnetosphere can change shape, where it can have there could be less shielding essentially or more shielding depending on what's occurring. If that TDCS, you know, connection with the human brain is there, I could totally see how there would be a connection there. Maybe it's just not as solid as Chijevsky was hoping.
Yeah, it doesn't go all the way to proving what he said.
Yeah.
That essentially that war is a natural cyclical process just like a sun cycle. Yeah. That's what he said. And that's a lot.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that we have – years after his death, we have proven that electromagnetic activity can affect the human mind. Let's introduce another character, a guy named Abraham Leiboff.
Yeah, he was a professor at Oakland University in the physics department, and he had been studying the effects of electromagnetism on human health since the late 1960s. So what he does is he studies tiny magnetic fields that are generated by people that are capable of being affected by these extremely low-frequency electromagnetic fields, ELFs, elves. And these are extremely low-frequency electromagnetic fields in people's environments they can pick up, or disturbances in the Earth's magnetic field. And he's done experiments on how these disturbances might affect social behavior as well.
Yeah. So here's what his theory is. He's created this electromagnetic theory of consciousness. And similar to Chijevsky, he says, okay, consciousness is a product of these small magnetic fields that are generated by neuronal flows in the brain. He says that this magnetic field is probably minuscule. It's around like 100 nanotesla, which, without getting too in the weeds, just so you know, is very – we're talking very small time. Very, very small time.
Smaller than a micro machine's version of a Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Smaller than a bread box. Right? I don't know much about bread boxes, but it's smaller.
I think it's designed to hold a single loaf of bread.
There we go.
It's basically a bread case.
But you can make loaves of so many sizes.
You know, your standard loaf size.
Standard loaf size.
Like the kind that you see filed away in the grocery store.
So he says, given that billions of these interactions can be happening in the brain at any time, it could produce a larger electric field. Like all these tiny things could add up to something larger. And if this larger field is the sum total of all the fields generated by all neuronal activity in the brain at a given moment, then maybe that is what consciousness is. Maybe it's just the interaction and the collaboration of these different tiny, tiny magnetic fields. If he is right, then that means that these tiny electromagnetic fields generated by the brain are capable of being influenced by other ELF or extremely low frequency fields, such as, and this is spooky, such as those generated by other people. Now, this gets into
mentalism.
This gets away from what could be considered proven methodologies. There are a lot of scientists that would have a problem with this next idea. What he's saying is that the interaction of these fields between what are different human beings could lead to them having effects that we don't really understand on one another. So in situations where there are two people really close to each other, like when a child is in its mother's womb or when two people are having intercourse, their fields, their magnetic brain fields, their consciousness things might be interacting, kind of bumper carring into one another. And there's something kind of beautiful about that, about, you know, brain magnet powers bringing us together. Let's go a step further. If that is true, and a lot of ifs, we're adding up ifs here, then the interaction between Earth's geomagnetic field and the electromagnetic field of the sun could affect the way ions interact with biological entities, meaning that it could also possibly influence their behavior. The brain magnets just get bigger, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Or the magnets get bigger.
These massive magnets doing the same thing as two people bumper carring into each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the sun and earth just sort of having intimate moments since we're a family show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everything we call organic life just happens to be in the same bed.
Yeah. And the moon is just like a pesky roommate that's like, hey, get out of here. Hey, stop. Oh, come on. Hey.
Nat's doing a thing where he's using his arm to show us the orbit of the moon.
Totally.
That's why I can only talk.
And when it comes around.
Yeah. I thought that was well done. So what does that mean? Does Liebhoff then support Chayefsky? The answer might surprise you.
Yeah. In an interview with Vice, he notes, quote, "I'm not a follower of Chayefsky. I think of him as sort of an amusing prelude to my present area of work."
Whoa.
What I'm saying is an amusing prelude. For the first time, there is a possibility of causation that goes along with this great number of correlative information in terms of the effects the sun has on living things. Maybe there's something there. There's an increase in suicides that is correlatable with solar activity. So why not social unrest?
So he's kind of saying, yeah, he's all but saying Chayefsky's cute, but I'm the real scientist here, which I don't want to denigrate anyone's work.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between a chemist and an alchemist, right? So maybe that's where he's coming from. The big question, where does this leave us now? Well, Reba, we are currently at the very end of solar cycle 24. As we said, solar cycles are numbered starting from 1755. We're going to reach the solar minimum, or we have reached solar minimum around late 2019, 2020. That means that solar cycle 25 is hitting the horizon near you very, very, very soon. This will hit peak solar activity sometime between 2023 and 2026, but cycle 25 seems set to have lower activity in general than preceding cycles. In fact, the last four cycles, the last 44 years-ish, have exhibited a trend of weakening solar activity. And as we know, things like people still got in fights across the planet over the last 44 years.
Yeah, and great amounts of unrest in regions across the world, right? Over those 44 years, think about what that encompasses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the 60s.
The Cold War.
Oh, yeah, the Cold War.
Various violent coups developing world.
Yeah. South America, the Middle East, they're just in the United States alone, like the terrible things that have occurred with an angry individual.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just keep naming off horrible things that have happened.
Let's see. Various violent coups in Western Sub-Saharan Africa.
Harambe.
Yeah. Yep. Harambe as well. Maybe a little lower on the list of terrible things, but yeah. No. We should keep it. let's see. I mean, but there have been shining moments in the last 44 years too, like
The Master of Disguise.
Yeah, just off the top of my head, Police Academy 4.
There we go. See?
You know, don't give up on humanity yet.
Was there a Police Academy 5 or was 4 as deep as it went?
I wouldn't be surprised. Let's look at that.
Maybe direct to video.
Maybe. I just feel like really as a genre, Police Academy 4 was the end. Part of art is knowing when to put the brush down. With that being said, Police Academy 5 Assignment Miami Beach was released in 1988.
Oh, wow. I don't remember them going to Miami Beach.
Yeah. You know, I stopped at 4.
I think the true fans all stopped at 4.
Yeah, right. So here we are. We would assume then if this is a predictive model, if the sun really is the they and stuff they don't want you to know for this episode and is conspiring to put humans on a doomed cyclical path to war, then we have to ask ourselves, can we predict these activities, right? These conflicts. Now, again, you'll notice in Chayefsky's arguments, he's purposefully being pretty general, His detractors would say he's being frustratingly vague. But we also have to remember that solar forecasting is pretty new, especially in comparison to daily weather forecast. And thank you, of course, to all the meteorologists in the audience. You are doing a wonderful job. We know the weather system is huge, globally interconnected, and tricky. So I just don't want to sound like we're being rude to forecasters because they can't do a thing that is currently impossible to do.
Agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
It's like saying pilots can't really fly. You know that? They get in planes.
That's right. It's those planes that are flying. Those guys are just pulling levers.
Yeah. They just know how to operate incredibly sophisticated and dangerous machines.
Hitting all those buttons and checking gauges.
Landing and taking off and not killing people.
Doing quick mathematics that I could never do in my entire life.
Yeah. No lie, I get anxiety seeing the films from the 50s and 60s where there's one person back there who's in charge of everything, that like the 3D position of the plane relative to everything else, and they just have a pencil.
Dude, really quick tangential thing. I know we're wrapping up here. My son had to do – he had to pick out his favorite book and then dress up like a character from his favorite book
today
at school.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys want to guess like what character he chose? It's almost it's tangential to this that we just did.
Superman.
Okay. Okay. Paul says Peppa Pig.
Sun Ra.
Sun Ra.
Mum Ra.
That would have been incredible.
Oh, okay. Okay. Wait.
We're talking about pilots.
Okay. Pilots. Famous pilots.
Okay. Okay, it's not Frank Abagnale Jr.
Porco Rosso.
Okay, it's not Porco Rosso.
Howard Hughes.
Okay, it's not Howard Hughes. It's not Bluey.
Is it someone from Police Academy?
It is Neil Armstrong. His favorite book currently is one of these that's like, I am.
Sure.
It's one of those books.
Oh, yeah.
And
great.
It's Neil Armstrong. He loves it. He loves the concept of being an astronaut. And today he put on his astronaut outfit and his helmet. And he went to school carrying his book and told everybody about it. It was awesome.
Dude, did he hold awesome. It aloft like you were just doing?
Yes.
Because that's real
he was
power
very
move.
Proud.
Does
like,
he,
that's great.
Are you guys going to let him eat space food?
Yeah, he already has eaten quite a bit.
There's, oh, yeah.
There's some gross versions of space food out
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only good one is the ice cream.
That's the one that's like the crowd favorite.
Yeah.
We also stocked up on MREs here at the office.
We did. Thank you, Ben.
We've got too many. Yes, that is amazing. And I hope that he, you know what? I hope he sticks with it. I hope he becomes an astronaut. I'll say it.
He's reaching for the stars, man.
There we go.
At the very least, you got to send him to space camp.
Yeah.
Following his daddy's footsteps.
My dude is going to space camp.
That's so cool. So here's where we leave Alexander Chevesky. His ideas did not meet with very much support in his lifetime, to say the least. In 1942, there was this guy who was a big deal in the USSR at the time. His name was Joseph Stalin.
I heard of him, I think.
Yeah, he's a real pill. He became aware of Chevesky's research, including this book he published in 1924 called Physical Factors of the Historical Process, or more of a pamphlet, an argument. And Stalin's people asked the scientists to retract his writings on solar cycles. You see, they contradicted Soviet theories about the reasons for the Russian revolutions, first in 1905 and then in 1917.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the politics got in the way, just like with Galileo. If you think about it, so the political climate of the USSR was such that all of history had to be portrayed as this inevitable, if slow, painful march toward the ultimate eternal victory of the proletariat, toward the workers' paradise. We like history is over. We are at the eternal present now, right? Very 1984. And arguing that this was just another series of conflicts that weren't particularly special, that they were dictated or influenced by nature, was first off very problematic, and more heretical, the idea that that meant these would inevitably happen again. We were not done with war. We're just waiting on the sun to be in a bad mood.
Or in that this proletariat paradise is just one next step. You know, there's like there are an infinite number of steps after, right? That's yeah.
And so, like Galileo, he refused to recant, and he was arrested. He was hauled off to a gulag for 8 years. He was released in 1950, sort of. He was taken to Kazakhstan, where he did science in coal mines for 8 years as a form of Soviet rehabilitation.
Wow.
But now we're still, you know, one thing you said before we started recording today, Matt, you said we're very much in the early days of any research on this, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, what do you guys think? Like, is this just a case of cherry-picking evidence? That's the thing that bothers me. That's one of my reservations. Like, how there are so many wars. There's so many conflicts. Furthermore, there are so many that perhaps the scientists would not have been aware of at that time.
Yeah.
It feels dangerously easy to go back and just sort of, kind of like you were alluding to, Noel, just go back and kind of fit in things that go with your confirmation bias.
I'm going to put this out here. This connection between the sun's activity and humanity's brain patterns and our, and you know, what we choose to do from a behavioral perspective, it's still something that is very much in at least sections of the scientific interest. In 2011, there was a study. It was called Sunspot Dynamics Are Reflected in Human Physiology and Pathophysiology. And it's something you can read if you go to the site that Ben and I know for sure and Noel go to every once in a while. It's the U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institutes of Health. You can find journals there and you can read an abstract. I would say look into this because it's really weird. It took this huge longitudinal study of pap smears and I believe it was self-reported breathing and oxygen levels in males. And it was just looking at within the solar minimums and maximums, whether or not there was any kind of change. Like if you're looking at some of the scientific testing there, the pap smears, like what were the rates of infectious diseases that were found during the maximums versus during the minimums. Mm-hmm. And again, it seems like a good way to maybe make a connection. But again, it's like two data sets that don't necessarily have anything to do with each other. And if you make those correlations, then it perhaps is just in the eye of the researcher, just putting that out there. But then again, in 2018, there was another one. And this one had to do with heart rates, just looking at heart rates and these, you know, the solar cycles. That one, by the way, if you want to look for it, is Long-Term Study of Heart Rate Variability Responses to Changes in the Solar and Geomagnetic Environment.
Rolls off the tongue.
But it's just – and that was in 2018. So just knowing that even now, this interest is still there in finding a connection depending on what it is. And I'm very much interested to see if something more concrete can be established at some point in the near future.
And what if we get to a point where that kind of correlation does have a provable causation? How does that change the activity of the human species on the planet? Do we have – you know what I mean? Are we realistically ever going to have a society where someone says, okay, guys, you know, I know we've had some religious or ideological disagreements, but we're at like maximum excitability. So let's just hold off for 3 years. Let's just chill for 3 years and then let's come back and talk. I don't think humans are capable of that. But if science can prove that, the bones of it are interesting enough that we should continue research on this. We want to hear from you. What do you think, folks? Is this a case of cherry-picking evidence and mistaking correlation for causation? Or are we emotional slaves to the sun, our first god? Or is it something in between? Let us know. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram.
We are Conspiracy Stuff in many of those places. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. Noel, if people want to check out your exploits, where can they go?
Oh, you can go to Instagram if you wish and look me up at How Now Noel Brown. And Ben, I believe you've got some social handles that lead directly to your individual self as well.
That's true. Yes, you can find this persona on Instagram at Ben Bolin, like bowling without a G. And you can find the same persona on Twitter at Ben Bolin HSW. Toss the ball back to you, Matt F.
Yes, I don't have any socials right now at the moment. I can't find them. They're somewhere. I just can't find them. But what I can tell you is that Steve Guttenberg is very excited about Police Academy 8. Which may be coming to us at some point, guys. According to ScreenRant.com from 2018, he was getting all hyped up about Police Academy 8.
Maybe it was the Sun Cycle.
Wait a minute. That means there were
6 and 7.
Two others post Miami Beach.
Yeah, there's one called Under Siege. I think that was 6.
I gotta check the Sun Cycle before. This is a lot of new information for me. I really did just stick with 4, you know.
Gutenberg's excited, so.
Yeah, but Police Academy 4 was divisive, and that's what art should do.
Yes.
We got to get out of here.
We do have to get out. I would say if there is going to be another Police Academy, now is the time for it to just, like, show up on Netflix one day, and everybody would go, hey, I'm all right.
Sun made that happen.
Maybe
it's just the season for a new Police Academy movie.
Police Academy 7, Mission to Moscow. That sounds somehow familiar.
Oh.
No?
Right. So that's the real title?
That is. Wow. We have a phone number people can call to let us know about everything from the Sun to Police Academy.
Yeah, you can call us at 1-833-STDWYTK.
Yes, leave a message and we'll hear from you. Okay, we're going to do something new on the show, everybody. As we're in here recording, I am going to check my app here, and the latest message that has come through on the wires is going to get played, and we're just going to react to it, okay? Is everybody ready? Here it is, the latest message from you.
Hey, guys, I don't know how much time I have. I do. 3 minutes. I was just wondering if you have any thoughts on Big Pharma killing type 1 diabetics with rising insulin prices. Thanks for all you do. I got to go. They're catching up. Thanks. I'll keep listening.
Now, to be fair, when we agreed to do this, we made a pact with one another that we would not listen to any of these before we actually played them in the studio. So you're hearing this for the first time with us. It is true that pharmaceutical companies, at least in the West, are accelerating the prices of insulin.
Yes, but, you know, why is that? Is there something behind that, as our caller has insinuated there? We don't know. Maybe it's something we can look into. And that is a reminder that what Ben just said, that's the first time we heard that. That was sent to us while we were recording.
And if you have any thoughts on the subject of Big Pharma and fixing insulin prices, you can use our final form of communication to get in touch with us. Send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Whoa. Projection theory.
Projection. Guys, did you ever think that maybe we and everything we believe is real is actually just a projection from the sun? We are in this weird way, three-dimensional projections of a two-dimensional space or object that is behind or a part of our sun?
Totally. It haunts me.
Okay, cool, because you can read about that on the internet right now. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.